My wife's in love with Chris Cuomo. For years I didn't know, though. He fights COVID, a great dad to his kids. That charm is pro bono. No, he's not me, though. My wife is in love with Chris Cuomo.
All right, welcome to episode 7 of Joke Artist. We are your hosts. I'm Ryan Dever.
And I'm Ryan Dever.
What?
I'm Jason Katz.
Oh, whew, I thought this was like a bad case of multiplicity.
We'll be right back.
And today's guest is a comedian and host, Paul Costabile. This is a very special episode. I grew up with Paul. Jason, you're friendly with Paul as well.
Oh, yes. Me and him have many friendly lunches. Dinners, too.
At Friendly's.
At Friendly's. We both got the chicken fingers in a vat of Thousand Island dressing. It's all about the dressing is what the medic said.
Yeah, Friendly's, the best microwaved food in the country.
Yes. Paul, what country? We don't know.
Yes, we don't know, but the country of friendliness. Yeah. And so Paul is a host, as we said. He's worked for iHeartRadio, MSG Network, Animal Planet, NBC. He recently hosted the game show Beat the Clock, which is available now on Peacock. There's a lot of rhyming things. We could go there, but we're not going to go there.
You won't see us going there.
You won't see us, but maybe someone else will. I don't know.
We'll see.
Yeah, probably not. But anyway, we had a really great talk with Paul about his career. It's a truly inspiring one. He's just a really great guy, really talented guy.
Really friendly guy.
Friendly
Full
guy.
Circle there. Did you see that? Friendly? Isn't the friendly?
Oh, God.
Oh, boy. You're going to cut that out of the intro, aren't you?
Yeah. All right. Welcome to episode 7 of Joke Artists. We are here with comedian and host Paul Costabile.
Paul, wow, thank you.
Thank you for coming on the show.
Yes.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for that pronunciation too, Ryan. That was sexy.
Yeah, it's taken a while to get used to. I admit, ever since you changed it, I don't know, how to approach you anymore. I don't know what to call you.
It probably sounds, well, I've known you for a long time, so it probably feels weird because it's totally not what anybody calls me in my family or my friends. It's almost like an obnoxious version of my last name. It's like calling you Ryan Devois.
Devois.
Oh, what yeah. is your, what is, how does it, how is it normally pronounced?
Miller.
Oh, wow.
It's a soft Miller.
That would have been way off. Jeez. I was going to say Stevenson, but okay. Yeah, Miller. I can see it.
I went reverse stage
real
name.
Hard at your last name.
I went reverse stage name. Like, you know, back in the day, you changed your name because it wasn't palatable for, like, middle America. I went so far the other way. It's like, ooh, who's that weird European guy that I can't pronounce on stage? That's what I went for.
It's fun to say.
It used to be Elabotskoke.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Wow. Yeah.
No, what happened was, it's an obnoxious thing, but you know in showbiz, I'm always confused if I should use a stage name, especially as a performer, because nobody says it right. But I learned Italian, which is my ancestry, and so I just started saying it the way they say it there, which is, I guess, could be kind of snobby if you think about it. But being in showbiz, I was like, let me just let it roll a little bit more, you know, like say it that way and hope people can say it. And to this day, people butcher it. Well, but Ryan didn't.
It's fun because it does flip that whole thing on its ear. You'd think that, you know, you have a name like Costabile and you'd make it like, I don't know, just not that.
Right.
And you'd go with like when we had Mark Summers on, his name was not Mark Summers and he just made it up, obviously, because and we found out it was because he had the same name as Son of Sam.
Yeah, right.
I heard that
and I thought of my own career and I thought, this is why it's not going well. You know, I need to be Paul Springs or, you know.
Well, you still could murder people if you chose to go down that path.
Yeah, maybe.
Sure
way to, sure
yeah, I think you're success. Doing personally very, very well. But if in your own mind you think you're not.
You could always turn to a life of crime.
Straight up, yeah, life of crime is.
Maybe I should change it to a mass murderer last name for, more recognizability.
Yeah.
Paul Mance.
Right.
Murder,
Paul Manson. Slaughter.
Yeah, I think that's good. And be sure to explain your reasoning every time you're asked. But, right. I mean, bringing up Mark Summers again, your career path is very similar to his in that you're a host, you're a performer, entertainer, just and like Mark Summers and stand up, and everything you do is kind of to become a better host, a better entertainer, just like Mark would do magic and do stand up mm-hmm. to hone his craft. You were a DJ for many years. I worked alongside right. you from time to time. You were constantly in front of crowds. You hosted a show on your college at the college you went to, right? You had a radio show. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You did UCB. You were doing all this, and then all the while you decided to go out and create your own late night talk show, literally from the streets of Times Square, New York.
Yes.
Called Gorilla Late Night, which I got to kind of work on that a little bit with you, which was a lot of fun.
What years was that around?
That was 2009, man. We're going okay. back.
Right.
Late night. This yeah. is when not as many shows, talk shows were on YouTube. And yeah, Ryan, that was the change for me where I had this delusional idea that I wanted my own talk show that I still sort of have. But it was cool because it wasn't like there was a million talk shows then. And we were not like virally successful in any way, but it really helped me creatively just say like, I'm going out every week and doing a talk, doing a monologue. I'm going out in the streets. I'm doing a full show. We're going to interview guests. We're going to do sketches. And it's... still looking back, I love it. And I'm, you know, it was just a pivotal time for me as a host.
Yeah. I mean, it was so ahead of its time. It was very reminiscent of the Tom Green show because you had sketch comedy, you had the late night interview vibe, but it also had the kind of spontaneity of like Impractical Jokers and Jackass because you really were in the middle of Times Square. And there were times where the cops would walk in front of the camera and ask you, like, what the hell you're doing and stop the shoot. There were people that would come on and ask what was going mm-hmm. on. You'd pull, you know, people off the streets to dance or eat watermelon or any kind of fruit and just do really silly things. So it was this kind of wild thing. And yeah, like, I guess, I don't know. I mean, viral, like millions and millions of hits. I don't know, but you did start doing sketches based on the Jersey Shore, and which is odd, and yeah. I think it's undeniable. You found that the Panamericano,
and you thank did you a, for knowing that.
You did a bunch of sketches making fun of Jersey Shore, and you even went out and went to the clubs that they were at and kind of joked around with them and not got in their face, but just, you know, playful, all in good fun stuff. And then shortly after those sketches came out and were kind of circling YouTube, they came out with their own video and used that song and did a similar cut, like a similar edit.
Yeah, it was the thing was, is like I'm from Jersey. So at the time, for, as a comedian, there was a little bit of that resentment of like, you know, we're not all like that, you know. So I put Tanner on and did this whole spoof of them, like running around Times Square, being just like them. We actually ran into Anderson Cooper. Remember that, Ryan? I'm like yelling yeah. at Anderson Cooper, like looking like a Guido, like right, all this Tanner on.
Do the Cooper thank shuffle, you told him, right?
Yeah, yeah, yo, Cooper. He was like, but what was really fun, and for me, that's just me fresh out of college, like trying to make a comedy talk show happen on the streets. Like, we got an inside scoop that a cameraman was working on the show down at a club at the Jersey Shore, and I showed up with an underage cameraman at the club at like 5 p.m., like with all our in costume. People just took us seriously in this Tanner and like the way we looked, thinking we just looked that way. And we waited for the cast to get there. And the fun part of the story, and think about like, I still am this way in showbiz, I think, where it's like you're sneaking around and you're sort of messing with people, but you're trying to find the funny. And we 100% got kicked out. Like the crew noticed that we're like, I'm next to Snooki and all the cast members, like taking shots with them. They're filming us. They asked us to sign a release. Like they like just thought we were dudes at the Shore, but we were filming a bit the whole time. So there was like this like mischievous part of it that ended with us getting thrown out because they realized that we were filming them with a hidden cameraman.
That's what was so funny about the show was you did, you know, run it because it's New York. You were able to run into celebrities. I mean, we did a fake Extreme Home Makeover where you would just went up to random people in the street and told them you were going to buy them a home. Right. And then you actually ran into Billy Joe Armstrong in the street and acted like he was funding everything basically. And he was so confused all the way to sneaking into Fashion Week and getting people to believe that you actually belonged there. And you wore like an old 60s baby blue tux.
Right.
And went into Fashion Week. So there was this kind of Jackass vibe, the show, of the fearlessness and kind of just getting in and saying, I belong, and people would buy it.
Definitely. And I think that was so fun at the time. Like, we were fresh out of college. Everybody who did that show, you included, Ryan, like, the rest of my crew were, like, still in college or, you know, starting out. And so it was a bunch of kids just running around trying to make fun stuff happen. And we were very fearless. And it was just, it was awesome because it you got away with a lot back then, too. I really do think even, you know, everybody does bits now, I think, which is cool. But back then, like, we did stand out because nobody, like, not everyone was filming with their cell phone, like, trying to get moments. Like, we had a whole crew, and it was, I don't know, it was a different time in many ways.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I could totally relate. I you know, have attempted to do similar stuff back then in the early 2000s with public access, though. That was where I began a sketch comedy show, and we did similar stuff where we did sketches and man on the street type of stuff and really silly things and pranks. And it was a totally different time back then. And this was right before YouTube, and then YouTube sort of came out during it. And, you know, I was able to transfer some of the stuff on there. But it's always fun to talk to somebody who has, you know, become so successful like yourself and has also done similar stuff like that I've done. And then, you know, see you rise up, you know,
oh, thanks,
beyond,
man.
All that.
Well, I'm glad it appears that way. But what I will say is, thank you. I think that's how I love being a host and an entertainer. Like, I think it's about doing showbiz and doing funny shtick in the real world. And I found that that's become sort of what I love doing as a comedian, you know, like I love like popping up in the world and messing with people and being playful about it. And that it started with that show. And I've sort of been doing bits ever since that are reminiscent of that. And it's a delicate balance. And I've always had so much fun. Like I just love part of why I love my job is going to mess with people. Like really, like I'm a sociopath with a camera crew on the streets. I mean, pre-COVID. I'm so used to going up to strangers and messing with them to the point where like I would typecast somebody if I just saw them, I'd be like, that's not it. That's it. That's it. Like it just like push people away until we get to the thing. But I don't know. I think we all need that like kind of part of it is this little kid in me who likes messing with the seriousness of adulthood, you know, like standing on a desk at a corporate office and doing dumb stuff. Like, I don't know. I haven't grown up in that sense. And that's part of why I think I do this job. I don't, you know, it's Peter Pan syndrome, basically.
No, but
that's my wife.
Wendy? Well, when you say you go,
Wendy.
Yeah. He tried, but it, you know, he got stuck in Neverland. Didn't work out.
Yeah.
But you ever see Hook? Come on. Anyway, you talk about messing with people and whatnot, but it is always in good fun. I mean, that's one thing about your stand up, about your sketch writing, about your hosting, is that it's not offensive. It's not like rude or there's no shock value, but it's also not like kiddie stuff. It really is a great balance of adults can laugh at it and kids can laugh at it too. And that seems like something you've carried through in all the sketches you do and in all the jobs you've worked at, is you kind of try to bring that element that one, people can have common ground, and two, adults can sit in a room with kids and laugh at the same thing. And Gorilla led you to iHeartRadio, which is where you basically created their digital interview content. They didn't really have that before, and you became the face of iHeartRadio when it was kind of becoming a thing, and interviewed the likes of, I mean, Taylor Swift, Justin Timberlake, Selena Gomez, Ed Sheeran, Jamie Foxx. I mean, like the list goes on, and everybody and anybody, Ryan Seacrest, even your now wife, Christina Perry, you met doing that job.
Yeah.
What was that experience like going from Gorilla? So you create this show, you're DJing, you create this show. Like you said, you're out of college, just trying to make it and decided to kind of go out on a limb and use your extra time to create the show. And it basically gets you this gig at iHeart.
Mm-hmm. What was fun about the iHeart thing was it's a similar theme we're talking about, like just like showing up and trying to do fun stuff. And I got hired as a blogger, and my first day on the job, I don't know if I ever told you the story, Ryan, but like I went up to Nicki Minaj. I got a camera and I went up to Nicki Minaj with a camera, and was like, and started doing an impression to her, like from behind the camera. Like, I thought it'd be funny. I was like, hello, Nicki Minaj. You know, she like talks like, I'm Nicki Minaj. I don't even know. Yeah. I can't even do it. Terrible impression. And kids listening who don't maybe know her, like the other Cardi B, like before Cardi B sort of. Anyway.
like yeah. just before.
She had a different thing. It was called PAP. Yeah. terrible.
What's that stand for? We'll be right back.
It stands for Pappy. Anyway. Oh.
All right.
She had a grandfather. School. She was really happy with her, and proud of her grandfather. She,
before Nicki Minaj, she was called Happy Pappy. It came from the network that she had to change the name.
That was her alter ego. She was like, my name's Nicki Minaj and I'm 97. I'm a grandfather.
Nicki Minaj has the best. You wouldn't even know. She's actually 95. You would never know. It's amazing. Wow.
Oh, I know. I've seen her up close.
Yeah. Anyway.
But anyway, so tell us that story.
Sorry about not getting a pap. I wish I had a pap line. I'm bummed with myself here, but I like saying pap.
tell us about that.
I ran up to her. So she, you know, she was at the gynecologist and she had to get a
pap stand.
I told Ryan before I come on this show, this is the audio that will get me canceled, and I'm just hoping that happens. I'm kidding. I don't hope that happens, but I'm nervous in our times that I'm drinking a beer right now. I'm talking to you guys. Like, give me a half hour, and something we document on audio tonight will cancel me in 10 years. Anyway,
we'll circle back to the murder and the WAP PAP thing in about 50 minutes.
Listen, in a future world, like the pap-wap thing is not going to be kosher in like 5 years max. Okay, anyway.
Yeah.
Or it goes the other way and it's made into its way into the dictionary. We'll see.
Right. Right. You never know, guys.
Yeah.
So I go up to Pappy Minaj and...
The story's never going to happen.
Pappy Minaj sounds like a rug or some sort of fabric.
Oh, okay. It's a Pappy Minaj. Got it at Lowe's.
Real nice. God. Very soft.
Wow. Is that an authentic Pappy Minaj? Wow.
Yeah. Squishy, though, too.
So anyway, I go up to her with the camera. I start yelling at her. And the record label guy at the radio station was like, who the hell is this kid? Because I always wore suits. I was like ready to be somebody there. And I wanted to interview people. And he complained to my boss and was like, this is not cool. Like, my artist had no idea this was happening. She's like, this is like, what the heck? And was so mad at me. But since from that day on, like, my boss protected me. He's such a great guy. His name's Colby Hall. And he came from the comedy TV world. And embraced the fact that I was this like hustler who wanted to do comedy videos with artists. And so he protected it. And we just kept like messing and trying to get time with artists when they were going to the radio stations. And the fun part of the story is like eventually that record label executive like made sure his artists came to my interview room to be interviewed. So we earned the trust of like the inside people that like, if I'm with your artist, it's going to be silly. It might be a little weird, but like, we're going to make them look good and we're going to have fun with them. And we developed that over many years there. And it grew all the way to, you know, hosting some of their TV shows and some, you know, building their YouTube up in a way that was really stronger than it was before. So I'm proud of the work we did there. I still sometimes late at night just watch myself with famous pop artists. If I have a bad day, you know?
Well, you started off getting in trouble yelling at Nicki Minaj, and then next thing you're interviewing Oprah. So, yeah, you did pretty well there.
Yeah, it was great, man. Also, you think about content, like, I hate to be the guy who's like, back in the day, but I do think brands everywhere want funny celebrity content, you know, all the time. But this was at a time, it wasn't even that long ago, but it was a radio brand not doing videos, and also not every brand was doing video content. Like, you know, I think everyone does video content now. So we were able to, you know, Selena Gomez came to our radio stations, and then she went and taped Fallon, and then she went home. Like, we were on that press run with those same types of players, which was very cool for me. Like, I was like, if they're in my little studio, I want to make it like a late night bit where their fans could watch us as much as a Tonight Show segment or as much as something else. And so we really tried to work hard to write bits, have some funny little shtick, you know, make it not just like how's number 7 on your new album. You know, I really tried to think outside the box there. And for years, I had the freedom to. That's what was crazy about it. Like nobody, it wasn't regulated early on. And that's what made it really fun. I mean, I met my wife there because it was unregulated. Like she walked into a studio and nobody was there but me and someone just helping with the camera. And we had like unfiltered, like raw time together, you know, well,
that, like, right.
That's what's so cool about it. And I think Jason would agree too. In our experience working in the digital world, everyone kind of when a guest comes in, yeah, there's questions and they try to play a game, you know, like never have I ever or whatever. But their goal is they're like, they want to pre-produce something unexpected, something natural. And they almost want bloopers. Like they want to force bloopers in because they don't, it seems like all these brands don't know how to create that kind of raw spontaneity and create chemistry. And for a video to start off with someone breaking a glass and be like, whoops. And then it goes, whoosh, and it's a right. People magazine. And then it goes into their interview. You were doing that all the time. And like, it wasn't games. It wasn't like, let me, yeah, like what's in your pocket or something like that. You right, do these right. weird things. Like when you had the lead singer of Coldplay on, Chris
right,
Martin.
Right.
And you just had him sing a love song to a shoe. Your thing was, your voice is so soothing. You could make anything romantic. So you had him sing a song to a shoe.
Exactly.
And it went viral.
Yeah. And think about like the, you know, we tried to write in a way that was like short attention span, but also like exactly like you said, like what's the thing about this guy that's unique, but also we could celebrate. Because that's what I was always trying to do. It's like,
right.
Let's do something silly. But we want to show that you're awesome. Like we want, you know, you're here trying to promote your stuff. I'm not going to like try and get you. And that's the one thing I hate about some interviews is like the like got you, caught you stuff. Nobody wants that, you know? And so we were able to earn trust with a lot of big names because we'd bring them in there and be like, yo, if you're cool, will you, you know, do you want to freestyle me and I'll play this drum machine and like, here's how it'll go. And they're like, yeah, sure. Or sometimes I wouldn't even tell artists and the best performers or improvisers would be able to hang like at an improv level and really just have a ton of fun. And those are probably my favorite moments. And UCB in that time in comedy in New York, like shaped me into this, like kind of like to a fault sometimes, like F it. Let's just see what happens, you know? And I learned yeah. the hard way that some of the biggest stars don't operate that way, which I didn't realize. I was like, let's just mess around. And they'd be like, wait. And then eventually, like what we're saying, like the regulation of that stuff, like I hate stuff when it's contrived. I don't like any canned interviews. In this world, I'm sure you guys know working in it. I also think fans and people watching don't want to watch people like with things that are just pre-planned. And the spontaneity is what makes it fun, and you really get to see somebody. And so I always just trying to harness that. And I'm always trying to do that with all my segments to this day. I feel like
what's at iHeartRadio. What's like? Do you have a really funny, great story with a guest that you had on?
Well, I always tell the story about my wife, but I met her there, and you probably heard it too many times. But I basically she walked in, and I you know we met on camera, and at the time I had no real help, so I just had somebody hit record on a camera I set up, and she walked on set, and so we have like the first moment we meet in person on camera, which you don't usually get. Usually it's a little more produced. Like we weren't even that produced. I was just rolling raw, which is just crazy because you watch the footage back and we're like the same couple we were the day we met. So that's crazy. Changed my life. And,
and your wife, Christina Perry. On the way.
Yes. Not the other one.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll edit that out.
That stands out. There's a funny story of like, and I always worry about like sounding like a name droppy guy in this world, but at the time, like we truly were with everybody in music because it's a big music brand, and I had the trust of their teams. One time, Mariah Carey came in. I'm sure you guys have worked with her, and I was like in a bubble. I'm like in a bubble, being the guy who's the interviewer, where like you don't see people. Outside of like being on set, and she just, you know, I'm not going to speak bad about her, but you could probably guess she just took a really long time to like approve how she wanted it to look, and she had champagne, and so like it was like hours before we worked and like interviewed her, and I was just like on set with her drinking champagne all day. And then finally, and like doing like weird, and like just took forever to actually shoot. And I had like the best time ever with her. And then when she left, like everyone was like, that was, you know, that was the most impossible situation ever for the crew. But I had like, you know, tunnel vision because I was having fun with these people. I don't know if that's right. The best story, but it was funny in that it was her, and like, it just took a really long time and we had a lot of fun together.
Yeah. I remember working with her a long time ago and, filming something with her. And, we literally, we didn't own a ring light at the time at the place that I was working at. And we had to buy one just to film her with and put it onto the front of the lens.
Wow.
She wouldn't let us film her without the ring light.
Right. Wow. Yeah, I mean, she's a woman who knows what she wants. God bless her. Yeah,
very super. But, I mean, mega successful. I mean, you know, it wouldn't have mattered what she wanted. It was totally fine. I was
right.
Just thinking the same thing. Hey, this person knows what they want, and it's clearly not hurting them.
Yeah, and part of the story I forgot to mention was she was married to Nick Cannon at the time, and she was like hamming it up with me, and literally took off her wedding ring, like this crazy diamond
wow.
ring.
Wow.
And gave it to me that's wait, the part what? I left out. That's wild.
No, wait.
And I feel so, like I feel like I was part of their demise because maybe I like cursed it, you know. I don't know, but
are you married to Mariah Carey?
Yeah, you missed the part where you broke up the celebrity marriage.
Yeah. I forgot
I totally went forgot down to, you know, jeez, wait a second, I didn't even sign the papers, we're still together.
Yeah,
what,
just weird things like that happen in there, you know.
Well, it's funny because yeah, like that, if you just quickly were to say that story, it sounds like a nightmare. And I'm sure we've all worked with celebrities where like they've been 2 hours late and then they show up and they suddenly want food. And then, yeah, they want a drink right. or something. And you're like, wow, I guess we're working till 8 o'clock tonight because this person has a total disregard for time and scheduling and right. human beings. But they're on those rare occasions, they can surprise you where like time kind of flies and you don't feel like it's going so long. I think Jay, we've probably had a few people we've worked with where, you know, you give them the champagne and then, you know, you shoot and then you cut. And then next thing you know, it's been an hour and you're still kind of all talking and
right,
shooting the breeze.
Yeah. Right. I mean, those are the most fun. Those are the best
for
shoots
sure.
and those are the best people to work with. You're like, wow, this person's just an actual person and they're not self-aware of how they could be a jerk if they wanted to be.
Yeah.
Right. Ryan, you just reminded me, though, that whole idea of like being mischievous, I feel like has followed me. There's a part of me as a host with these celebrities back then that it's a little muscle in me that like wants to remind them they're human. And that always was in the back of my mind, too. So like I always would treat people the same. But a part of me like loved trying to crack like celebrities that maybe weren't in the mood to like do a fun bit. And you just reminded me because that would also happen. And then it would be a challenge for me to basically win over people who maybe came in as stiffs or like had a bunch of publicists or had like a mode where they hate interviews, you know, because that happens too in our world. And the kid in me would always try to, you know, I'd love it. I'd be like, I'm going to really see if I can turn one on them and either get them to feel comfortable or remind them that like they take shits just like us. Like, you know, people who think they're better than everybody, you know, whatever it is. And there's a few stories from that time that happened too. One that sticks out, this is so random, but like John Cougar Mellencamp. I don't know who gives a shit who's listening, but he just sticks out of my mind. He's like a notorious, like hates being interviewed guy. And
he's too cool for school. Yeah.
It's the Cougar.
I mean, think about it. Cougar. But this is a guy, think about that era in music, dude. Think about like, he's like a rock star, right? And I show up with like, you know, a suit that looks like I'm wearing, you know, tight spandex that for the legs. Like that's a tight suit.
Sprayed on, baby, sprayed on.
You know, sprayed on suit, big hair, this metrosexual guy in New York City is going to interview you about music. I'd be probably, you know, I could see him judging me up and down and the guy hated my guts, you know, like immediately.
But he did look you up and down, you said. Nice. Okay.
Yeah. But But what's fun about these moments is like, you know, I that awareness and just the comedy of it and then trying to crack him and talk to him and really interview him. And it worked out and we had a great interview. Like, but it's just funny to remember like those situations where, you know, you have these people who are just used to, it's a couple of things. They're used to people talking to them and interviewing them. And then also they don't want to deal with you. They don't want to be there. I just liked kind of messing around with that too. There's some comedy in that to me.
Well, it seemed like you wanted a real human connection with some of these people, and like almost like a friend connection with them, and it seems like you achieved it.
Most of the time, I feel like it's like I wanted to be a breath of fresh air for a lot of them. And for all I know, they could have left and been like, that was the cheesiest thing ever. But I feel like in the moment, we did get some authentic, fun stuff that happened on camera with a lot of people.
Well, you're a huge fan of Late Night.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're a big Conan fan and a big Letterman fan. And I feel like that's Letterman's thing. And that's what I, you know, where he would have people on and he just didn't care that they were celebrities. He would kind of throw it in people's faces and do that similar vibe. So I think you captured that kind of essence of Letterman of just kind of like, yeah, I'm not like starry eyed. I'm not nervous to interview you. Let's have a good time and just cut the BS. And you know, like,
yeah,
I don't need to bow down to you. Let's just have, you know, we're both working. We're both here. Let's have a good
exactly.
time.
Exactly. Yeah. There's only a few people I feel like that have really, and you guys probably can relate in your work too, where you see them and you're like, oh wait, that's that movie star. Like that's crazy. But I always try to humanize because why not? These people go around like with people not humanizing them all day. That's like, you know, I liked being the person who was like real with them as much as I could be.
Right.
And I think that could be refreshing in that space because nobody likes being treated like they're not normal, I feel like. And most celebrities are treated that way. And look, this is not to say celebrities, ooh, boo-hoo, you're successful, you're known. That's not what I mean. But you know, you guys get what I'm saying.
Yeah, for sure. But one that stands out in my mind, I'm not sure if you ever worked with him, but when Shaq came in and we worked with him, and that was the nicest guy ever, and funny and quick. And, you know, talk to everybody who wanted to talk to him, you know, took pictures with everybody.
I did not know that about him.
And tall.
Yeah, super tall.
This is not a good Shaq impression, huh?
Oh
my God.
We didn't know Shaq was on the line.
Yeah, whoa.
Shaq, wow. Is that you? Paul or Shaq? Who are we talking about?
This is not even close. And you know
Mellencamp,
what?
Is that you?
You know what? I'm not even going to Shaq because like what I said earlier, if I do a little more Shaq, I'm done.
Yeah.
You're just like, what? I thought you mean the guy from Steel?
Yeah. He was his famous line was, dip me in shit and roll me in breadcrumbs. That was a quote from the movie Steel.
Oh no!
Good God! It was. I don't know if I've seen it.
Lately, that must have been the director's cut.
No, it really was in the movie. Shackety
Shack.
He said it. It was. I watched it in between falling asleep to Blue Chips many times.
Oh, Blue Chips. That's a good movie.
But to get
Nolte.
Back,
now I want to hear your best Nick Nolte impression.
Hello, I'm Nick Nolte.
My God, that sounded just like
unbelievable.
If he was a British woman.
Paul, do you remember we created that like fake character where it was a Broadway actor that wanted to obviously be an actor, but it's the typical Broadway actor that sucks.
Oh my God, that was the best.
And he prided himself as being an impressionist, but every impression was him singing. And he'd be like,
that's the best.
Could you now do Gollum from Lord of the Rings? And he'd be like, Gollum, I'm Gollum. I'm looking for the ring. Where is it?
That's one of my favorite characters. I love that.
That was every character.
Like, Jeff Goldblum. I'm Jeff Goldblum. Jurassic Park. Yeah.
Jeff?
Yeah.
Oh, never mind. Sorry. I thought it was Jeff.
Gollum.
Gollum. So stupid. All right. Summer is over and fall is upon us. And in New York City, at least, you know, restaurants are starting to open. But guess what? In a few months, maybe, we won't have to wear masks anymore. And it's going to be really shocking when we all take our masks off and we see that we've aged. I know Jason and I are now completely bald and we're full, riddled with wrinkles. Good Lord.
I look like a California raisin. I want a Snapchat filter for real life that permanently...
Well, you know the closest thing to that.
Yes.
Plexiderm. With Plexiderm, all you need is 10 minutes and you can look 10 years younger. Plexiderm is a clinically studied serum that gives your appearance the right kind of changes.
What's crazy about Plexiderm is that it will make you look 10 years younger. So if you are 10 and you do take this, you will no longer be born. Or you'll be zero. I don't know. Be wary of how old you are while putting this cream on because you will technically go back in time.
By the way, it visibly reduces wrinkles, fine lines, and even under eye bags in minutes, and the results will last 4 hours. You can try a 6-application trial pack for just $14.95 with free shipping when you visit triplexiderm.com and use the code BELIEVE. Again, that's triplexiderm.com and use the code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, at checkout. I mean, was there ever, and you know, if you don't want to say, that's fine. Was there ever a guest where you couldn't get them to kind of come around? Was there ever someone that you just kind of like, eh, you know, but I get it, but they just didn't, they weren't into it.
Plenty of times. I think some of the like super artsy indie artists sometimes like were like too cool and hippie to like even like have a conversation sometimes, you know, like there's lights and like, you know, it's just like my music and like, you know, I was just like inspired, that those type of people. And then also again, another name drop thing, I'm just trying to have anybody who listens to this think I matter by naming a bunch of celebrities.
You can't stop, can you?
I can't stop, but basically probably the Pope and Jesus.
Really? Wow. Ryan, and that was, you know, the same interview?
You know where that comes from, Ryan. Yeah. That's an old bit I was repurposing there from Mike Nichols and Elaine May. Anyway, what I'm saying is, Taylor, I'm like on Taylor Swift's bad list from that time, and I don't think she really would know or care of who I am at all now. But that's somebody who, she's a very controlled, like very set in what she's allows people to do around her. And my job at one of the TV shows was to go up to all the artists before they went on stage at Jingle Ball at the Garden and interview her, or interview anybody. And I ran up to her unannounced with a camera crew she was about to go on stage at the Garden, and she's just very, to her credit, she's very like, you know, set in how she does stuff. And I was this curveball goofball in like a Santa suit, like, and she had her inner ears in. She was about to perform, and I was like, Taylor Swift. Geez. And so I don't think it matters now, but I do know, I don't work there anymore, so I could say, like, you know, at the time, like, it went up the channels at the company, like, from her team. Like, how dare this guy run up to Taylor Swift before she performs at the Garden? And so that was one of those moments where, like, again, this is my improviser thing coming out, where some people, you know, they want to be in control of how things flow around them. And someone at that level, I get. But it was just, it's a funny story for me now, because like, I totally pissed her off before she performed at the biggest arena in the world.
She just woke up in a cold sweat and was like, I had that dream again.
I know. Yeah, yeah. The Santa suit guy. No, who are we kidding?
But no, I mean, kidding? That's cool. She's never thought about it. It's funny, though, you know, that you have stories like that, though. And I mean, it's also great that you have stories like that. But it's just, you know, it goes to show you that, you know, some people can... Some people can be humanized like that, you know, and be okay with all this stuff. And then some people, you know, they might not be able to just roll with everything, you know?
Yeah, you'd be surprised. I mean, we talk about comedy. It's the improv thing. And I'm not saying, like, look at me, I do improv. But, like, I was surprised. Even actors, you guys know this too. Not everybody is an improviser. Like, I just assumed all entertainers improvise. I don't know why I thought that. And so I had to learn the hard way with some of these interviews back then that some people want. And even some comedians. I remember one time I did a bit with, this is so random, but the guy from The Hangover, Ken, the...
Ken Jeong?
He used to be a doctor. Yeah, Ken Jeong. I did a bit... I'm really reaching for my name drops in this episode.
What? I want to cover it all.
Pop artist.
Listen to this.
Ken Jeong. Boy, I did some with him once. It was really cool to see someone like him work. I'm trying to nerd out about comedy with you guys because I listen to the show and I love hearing when people talk about comedy the way you guys talk about it.
So you're the listener.
Wow.
I'm the listener.
I'm the one.
I'm the guy in the Philippines. I'm the guy. I actually changed my IP address to the Philippines. So you guys have
cool.
We were so excited about that. Damn it.
No, it's me in Jersey, but I want you to think you have Filipino fans anyway.
Well, all right. Cool. Awesome.
I remember working out a bit with him and I was like, let's just do this funny thing. Like, I'll pretend like I'm doing this and you do that. All right, you ready? And he like wouldn't let me start. And he like, it was so cool to see though in real time. Like, he worked out the setup and the punch and kept talking about it and like really fine tuned what was funny about it. And then when we recorded, it was hilarious and he absolutely nailed it. But I was so not used to that. You know, you guys know as improvisers, like this, it was just cool to see him work out the sketch in like a really good way. And that's what's so intriguing and also hard to me about stand up. Like, I'm an improviser more than I'm a stand up comedian and writer. And so I struggle with just like getting the setup and the punch really tight and really well crafted. And I'm working on that, you know, now.
Is that something you wrestle with when you do stand up, where, you know, you were saying that it was tough for you when you'd interview someone, you were so, you obviously you got to prepare and blah, 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 but you were so drawn to just like, you know, let's just do it live, as they say, let's just improvise. Are you kind of torn with stand up in that way, where you want to prepare, you want to know your material, but you also want to just say F it and just get out there and see what happens?
Yeah. I think I got away with doing both by hosting shows, which, like, I feel like a lot of comics don't want to host shows. And for me, it's exactly what I want to do, because I could work on my written material. Then I could also mess with the crowd and really mess with my improv and see what works in that way. And it's like the best of both worlds, because I do think my strength on stage is like the moment and like playing off people more than writing jokes. I listen to your podcast and the people we've had on, I'm like, my God, I wish I could write like that guy. I don't have the writing chops, but I know that. So I'm trying to really get better at writing, because good stand-up has to be well-written. I don't know if there's any stand-up besides like Robin Williams maybe that could get up there and rip an entire set with maybe not writing much of it down. Maybe Don Rickles too. I don't know if there's anyone else.
I think Big J Okerson, right? I think he mostly does a lot of crowd work, like tons of crowd work, and just sort of base stuff off of one thing. And Russell Peters, believe it or not, he'll legit do a full hour, and he's only written like, you know, he'll only perform like 10 minutes of material, but he'll do like a, you know, a full hour, hour and a half. And just based on like one person will speak in the audience, and he's able to just pull it off like that. It's pretty incredible. But like,
that's awesome.
So does that ever like bother you when you're on stage, that you want to, I mean, you know, I know you want to improv obviously, but you have these written down jokes, and does it bother you if you're not able to get to them, and you can and you just end up improvising a lot of your set, or do you prefer it that way because you want to just improv?
I think the improv for me is the save a lot of the time, you know, like I'll come up I like being put in a corner with the improv. But the material, I used to be like against stand-up because I was so into the moment and like being authentic, right. And I always thought like I couldn't just say the same set all the time and do jokes all the time that are repeated. Yeah. But what I've learned doing it more recently is like it isn't the same ever. The material could be the same, but every show is different. And I've learned from performing a little bit more that like it is a lot of improv around your material, and your material is always changing. So that I look at it differently now. I don't look at it like I'm up there reading a script, you know, because there's room for the nuance of the live thing, every show. But if I could get good enough to just work the crowd for an hour and a half, like that would be my dream. And that's kind of my goal, more than being the best joke writer of all time, just because I think I maybe am better positioned to get better at having fun with crowds. But then I am envious, though. You know, you get the comedian jealousy of like when I hear like a really good written joke, I'm like, man, I wish I could write that. But what I do is I plagiarize it and I say it's mine, because that's usually, I'm just kidding, I don't do that. But.
I mean, Joe List was saying that on his episode. He was basically saying that like he writes jokes and is like, this is not funny. And he'll hear someone else say a joke and be like, damn, I wish I could write a joke like that. And then he'll tell a friend the joke he wrote, and his friend will be like, no, that's incredible. That's great. And he's like, really? All right. And he goes out and does it. And he's like, oh, I guess that was pretty good. So I feel like with comedy, there's always that, like, you're always chasing yourself and who you could be with your strengths. And ultimately, you just kind of play to your strengths. And that's what makes you in a way. Because I know even Mark Summers was saying, like, for him personally, he was like, I knew I wasn't a great stand-up comedian.
Right.
But I knew it was good for me to do. And I played to my strengths. I was good in front of a crowd. I knew some magic tricks, and I could make it work. So he just did that. And that's kind of how he got Double Dare, was just honing that skill that made him and made him funny, which I'm sure he probably wished he could have been a, you know, Seinfeld joke writer.
Right.
But that wasn't who he was. And I think every comedian has that struggle, and every comedian wants to be able to get on stage and make it work and go up there without material and riff. But if you don't have years of experience in front of a crowd or improvising or sitting down and writing or going out and just being a part of the world, you're not going to make it. You're not going to.
For sure. You know. Yeah, I totally related to the Summers episode, by the way, so much, just so you guys know, because this is amazing. I heard that episode and I had been in touch with him because I did a kids game show a couple years ago, and I was like inspired by Double Dare. And so and everyone on the show was worked on Double Dare when I was a kid, and like the game show people, it's wow. like a small world. So people who were working on the show I did worked with Mark, and so we somehow got connected back then. And then I heard your episode. I told you, Ryan, I reached out to him again. I was like, I need to talk to you. And so I literally listened to your podcast, which I'm on now.
Wow.
Then I called Mark Summers and we connected because I related a lot to his journey as a host and also the way he talked about stand up and, you know, how he did it. And similarly, like, I just want to become a better entertainer and a better performer, and I want to get on stage and just be better at that. And he seemed really similar.
I wonder if he'll call you after now.
Maybe. I don't know. But it was cool chatting with him, man.
And I mean, that's keep going back and forth.
That's sort of the goal. If we can make t-shirts, if we could get to a level in the relationship where we make t-shirts of each other calling each other, you know, when people do that sometimes, like a bromance, that'd be cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
If we could just, you know, write joke artists on the back or something small on the sleeve.
Dude,
we'd appreciate that.
Put the tag on there.
So you're talking, of course, about Beat the Clock. So after iHeart, you went to work for NBC and just, I don't mean to like not go right to Beat the Clock, but you started working for New York Live and doing comedy segments and side segments on New York Live. And you got to work alongside Sarah Gore, who Jason and I were lucky enough to work with when we were at Open House. Super nice, super professional, awesome to work with. And while you were at New York Live, that's when you got the gig hosting Beat the Clock, right?
Yes. New York Live has been great. It's my home-based show, local TV on NBC. You guys, Sarah's the best. I actually got that job because of Sarah. I was harassing everybody over there. I said, I want to do bits for you guys. And I eventually sent my stuff to like everyone on air there. And Sarah was one of the people who forwarded along and was like, hey, maybe we should try this guy. And her like push helped me get in the door there. So I'm indebted to her forever. There's good people out there if you hustle it, you know?
Right.
But that show's awesome because it's a daytime show where you could just mess around. And we've done like everything from like me being in a hot dog costume on Halloween to actual impactful like mom and pop shop segments with old couples that are trying to keep their businesses afloat. And I've kind of repositioned, I think, what matters to me as a host from doing that show for so many years, where you look at all the A-list celebrity stuff and then you look at some of the mom and pop stuff I do. And as you know, becoming a father changed it too. Like, I really love doing like fun comedy with real people. And that show was really pivotal for that. And same with the game show. It was like kids and their families and trying to make moments with them. And look, I still do interviews with celebrities if that's what I end up doing. But it's been really fun to like hone that part of me as a host with New York Live and the NBC stuff.
How does that work, though? How do you go from a New York Live? And I know you're still on New York Live, but how do you do that? How do you do New York Live? How do you do you know, the NBC show, and then how do you do the Animal Planet show? How do you do all these shows and basically, you know, still live your life and, you know, have a family? And is this the way you like living your life? Is this the way you love it, where you're just doing stuff more and more and more and more? Can you not get enough?
Yeah, I definitely can't get enough. I also am not working as much as the game show year, like since that time. So because I'm like freelance, so I feel like I could definitely be doing more shows now. But yeah, I love wearing many hats as a personality and like a comedian, you know, and a host. And I there was one year where I did like 3-4 game shows. I was like the character in Aziz Ansari's show where he like hosted the baking show. What was that?
Yes.
Oh yeah, Master of None.
Right. Yeah. So like I was like that character one year. I did a show which I'm not ripping on it, but it was called Doodle Wars, and it was a art competition show, kind of like Top Chef but with like artists, which is really cool. But I just kept getting these game shows, and that was always a dream of mine to do game shows. And Yeah, to answer your question, Jason, I always wanted to be doing a ton of things. I do miss like longer form interviews. Like I do miss the even artist interviews, like the iHeart stuff, or just having a platform to do like real interview stuff. Because the stuff on New York Live is great, but it's bite sized. It's really quick segment within a 30-minute show. You know, even doing a podcast of my own and talking to people longer, I'm more interested in doing now. But but yeah, man, I love making the world fun. I feel like I want to make my life in the world constantly like a show and entertaining. And even if I'm not on a show, I still feel like I am that way off camera.
Yeah, I mean, I just think our listeners, you know, who are fans of yours as well, also sort of, I don't know, they kind of want to maybe know if you wouldn't mind spilling like some of the secrets basically of, you know, how you go about doing that. Like what is the technical process of you know, sort of auditioning for these shows, and was the, or did you not audition? And also was these, if you did audition, were they hard or how does that sort of work, auditioning for game shows?
Oh man.
If you did.
I've mainly auditioned for stuff, and it's like anything else. It's like you just show up and go out and try your best and try to be natural. I will say, I think one of the differences, or maybe something that I've always done, is like, oh, I just hit my mic. Sorry. I don't turn it. There's some people, performers, who turn it off. I feel like I don't have an off switch as much. And I think that maybe is part of how I audition in a way that maybe has helped me. Like I'll go play games on a test show and then I'll like mess with the crew, or I'll just have fun with whatever the situation is. And that's helped me, I feel like, in getting some of these jobs. Yeah. And then the part of the process, like, you know, I've done everything under the sun, which is super humiliating too. Like I have tons of stories of like, there's still like 100 videos in my cell phone of like me like hosting like Whack-A-Mazoo Daily or whatever. Like there's always opportunities that you just show up for and try and go out for. And I think I've also said yes a lot of the time because you just never know what it could lead to. But it could be super, super humiliating and weird and like, not humiliating, but like just submitting yourself on camera, on your cell phone, shooting yourself. The Beat the Clock show, I was like very late in the game and I was working another job. I was working at the Hollywood Reporter and Billboard, which I don't even know if they did this, but I took their cameraman on the roof of the building we were at and like filmed my test tape for them. And then sent it over. And then that got me out to LA and in front of everybody. And then I had to do the games in front of like the whole network and a bunch of casting people. And I guess what's been good, and I feel like really good comedians are this way too, is you get really used to the world of like of doing your thing. Like as a host, I'm very comfortable with that world. If I had to go do an hour stand-up set for millions of people, I probably would bomb. But I'm very used to hosting and being, like Ryan said, I've been DJing weddings and bar mitzvahs since I was like 14. So I'm comfortable holding a microphone, and that has helped me, I think, too, just kind of be like, you know, if I get this, it's great. I'm just going to be myself. I think that's what people are looking for too when you get hired as a host. They want someone to be genuine. They don't want someone to be super canned or not real or fake. You know, it doesn't last long.
Well, like you said, I mean, there's a difference between kind of, well, you kind of said it as being on, and it almost seems like with a lot of people, sometimes being on is not a good thing. Like that to onlookers, they could say, oh, he's just somebody, or he or she is somebody that's always on. But, you know, it seems like the people that are really good at what they do, like yourself, you could say, okay, he's always on, but it just comes down to being yourself. It's just you being yourself all the time. And to some other people, they might think, oh, that's him being on. But it really is, you get comfortable with yourself and your craft to a point where it's just you, that you can be yourself all the time. And I think that that's tough for a lot of people. You know, I feel like especially for stand-up comedians, a lot of time they feel like they have to be the guy or the girl that people see on stage. But it seems like you've gotten to a point where it's just you all the time. And of course, you know, we all experience every kind of emotion and we can't always like be the entertainer, but it's kind of a goal, right? In comedy and in entertainment to not be two different people. You're always constantly yourself.
For sure. Genuine. Yeah. I think also I rely on other people. Like the reason I love interviews, like I've hosted mindless hosted shows and I have had days where I'm like, what am I doing? Like, who cares? Why am I just reading this BS by myself? So I think I picked
that to the guest.
Sorry. So I wonder, yeah, I know. But I wonder why. I think people is what really helps fuel me a lot of the time. And even if it's stand up and it's like, you know, messing with the crowd and getting that. Because in the host space, if you're like doing like, even now I do a lot of stuff from home for NBC and I love the segments, but I also like just miss the interaction and the fun with people. And so right. I think it's been easier to be comfortable in that world when I'm like, when I'm with other people that are also having fun or I'm making John Cougar Mellencamp crack or whatever it is. Or I'm papping with Pappy. It's just, it's always.
Out it's of context, always, it sounded like you were making crack for John Cougar Mellencamp.
Well, I'm making crack for Cougar Mellencamp.
Making Pappy with Campy. But that's been something I recognize. And also, you figure out what works for you. Like, that's why I think I am a lot of the time similar to how I come off in interviews and stuff.
Well, yeah. I mean, Jason and I, in our last episode, were talking about how, you know, you don't always get the opportunity to work on something that you're passionate about and that you're excited about and then you love the material. And a lot of times you're doing freelance gigs or you're editing or you're shooting or you're hosting or you're performing a corporate gig as a stand-up. It's a lot of times it's stuff you don't want to do. And so when you do get those gigs that you're excited about, it's like you've been working for it and you're so prepared for it at that time and you just relish in it and you just, it makes it all worth it. It's like, I mean, I'm a terrible golf player, but like going to play golf and you hit like a million bad shots and then you get the one that's like just straight and perfect and you go, I get it. This is amazing. Let's mm-hmm. keep going. This is like, let's keep playing. And I feel like that's comedy in a way.
For sure. Yeah. You take a million bad swings and then I said this today because I golfed earlier, which I don't even do a lot, but I was joking with my buddy. I was like, you know, life is just like a stroke of golf. You know, sometimes you hit it the wrong way. You hit it the right way. You find the ball and you just get it back on track. But it is.
Sometimes
it is
you have a stroke.
Yeah. Sometimes you. Yeah.
And the guy said, sir, please just give me my stuff and get off this course.
I was actually. Yeah. He was like, give me my caddying. Club. I was caddying.
I was under the impression that you were.
Yeah.
He goes, yeah, the guy's like, why are you holding a microphone?
Yeah, yeah, my like, goddamn I'm here putter. For life advice, right? I was like, hired
welcome.
For this.
Welcome to the show. I do shows everywhere.
You're on a perpetual game show. You're nonstop, even when the cameras aren't rolling.
That's sort of how it is, actually. You're right. I did say to my neighbor the other day, this is really sad to admit, but she was pregnant. She actually had the baby, but the show was Beat the Clock. And I know her kids watch it, which is just like so cheesy, but she's like about to pop. And I'm like, how much time do you have on the clock? I was like, let's see the clock. And then literally she had the baby like that night.
She was like, she had the baby. There's a restraining order, please.
You're like, not everything's a game show. My water broke, you jerk. Anyway.
Yeah. And you're like, how many gallons if you can fill up these buckets in 2 minutes? Yeah,
yeah. It's double dare.
Empty those fallopian tubes.
Oh, God.
You said that one. That's getting you canceled, not me.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. That was me, everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah. Speaking of Beat the Clock, though, I really wanted to ask beforehand. So you're, you know, you get that audition. You're going to go to L.A. to audition and you're living here in New York. What is that feeling like for somebody like yourself? Like, are you like, wow, this is, you know, a big time game show. This is NBC. Are you? And I know you're saying you're being yourself the whole time, but do you get in your head a little bit or are you just so chill with it? You're totally fine. Or are you super excited though that you're getting on a plane to go to another state across country?
That was excitement for me because I also was super nervous. Everyone who's ever done anything, I feel like, who I want to be like in showbiz has done some game shows, especially like comedians. Uh-huh. Or you look at someone like Jimmy Kimmel, came from radio, did game shows, did right. his thing. Or even before him, you know, the Johnny Carsons of the world started in game. So many good entertainers and hosts and comedians did game shows, and it's a good format for comedy and improv. And so I always wanted to do one. So when I got that opportunity, I did feel like it was fateful. Like I kept saying for years, I got to get a game show. And so I was super excited, and it was a whirlwind thing where like I got the call to go, and they said, you know, pack like you're going to get it, because it was really late and they couldn't fill the host spot. And then they picked me like the very last second, and then I auditioned on a Thursday, and that Monday we were filming like 3 or 4 episodes, and we ended up doing 5 episodes a day after that. So I felt prepared though, because I've been hosting at iHeart for so long and just really wanting to do a game show, and everything in life is iterative. Like a game show is like doing games with kids at their bar mitzvah and you're the DJ, but it was cool. And I felt like it was everything kind of happening that I'd built towards trying to do it. And then I remember the first time coming out of, you know, the first, it's a live studio audience, so that's also a dream too. And that also is what, to get back to comedy, that's what lit like a light bulb in my head about like, I need to be just doing stand-up again. Like the next time I get a studio game show, I want to be able to absolutely kill from a comedy perspective better than I did then. And I don't think, we had fun, it was a kid's game show, but like, I do think there's an opportunity to kind of be a really good stand-up around doing game shows and the live, like, and that live energy. And so it made me think like, I got to get better at stand-up. And
but could you be in the moment during it, or did you not, or you just couldn't?
Yeah.
You were able to live in the moment.
It was a mix of things. There was a lot of there's a lot of like business with game shows too, rules and making sure people, you know, understand the rules. They were like, the one thing I'll never forget is how specific game show producers and lawyers are about like actually, I don't know if you guys know this, like telling the on television, like making sure you say all the rules properly or like they could get in trouble. That's kind of like a really funny when you're filming live to tape. It's like you introduce the game and then like they stop down and like a team of lawyers show up and they're like, did you understand the rules? Did you do this? There's this, here's this, like to kids. So that was kind of funny to like break out of that. But in general, it was a blast to make, and it was a dream to get that call to go out and get it. And when I got it, I was really excited. And then now to have like a, you know, network game show gig under my belt with that company is just nice on paper for me moving forward there and hopefully growing there.
Yeah. Well, you also had the Animal Planet show as well.
Yeah. Which was ridiculous.
Wow. I mean, still very, very cool. And, you know, and also, it's also a network gig. What is the situation like, if you don't mind talking about it just really quickly, the differences of sort of like something that would be for Animal Planet versus NBC, like treatment wise? Are we talking like, you know, your dressing room is filled with fresh fruit, or, you know, or is it canned peaches?
He's dead serious, by the way.
Honestly, the network game show is the best I've ever been treated as a host because it was produced by the best production, one of the best game show production companies, Fremantle, who does like American Idol all this. Yeah. You know them. So they just, it's like factory, you know, they know how to do game shows really well. And so like, I will say that was the first time in my career, and maybe only since, it's gone only the other way, where they were like, what do you need? What do you need to stay? You know, you got 5 episodes a day. Like, what do you need? And I was like, espresso? And like within a half hour, there was like an amazing espresso machine in my dressing room. I was like, I could get used to this type of gig.
Yeah.
And I now mean, like, call Mellencamp. I need my crack.
I need Mellencamp and my crack.
But honestly, but from a good humbling perspective, like that stuff really doesn't matter. And I've learned, you know, you don't need that stuff, but it was nice to be treated like just to harness like my one job, which was hosting. Cause you don't really get hired as a host. A lot of the time you get hired as a producer, writer. Oh, by the way, host the interview, you know, by the way, edit this. And yeah, you could be on camera, and it's not usually it's not usually just to have fun and be the guy on, you know, hosting the show. And so being treated that way it was a good perk for that gig.
Right, absolutely. That's sort of always my understanding of it. Obviously, it's you know, you try to be humble about it. But as much as you would like to be humble, you know, it's just gotta change you slightly in the moment. You know, like not in the moment. Maybe like, you know, a couple episodes in, like, wow, like this is what the other side lives like, and it's bizarre and. You know, and also just a lot of fun, I would assume.
Yeah. To your point, though, I mean, everyone's concerned about, I can't imagine being like Ellen, and not to bring up, you know, everything with her now, but like being at that level where like everyone needs to know where you are at all times. They need to rely on you hitting your mark, being in this place, and even just doing a network game show for a couple of weeks. Like it's that way, and you know, you have to just be in the spot. Where is he now? Was he always in the bathroom? You know what I mean? Like I did it for 2.5-3 weeks. I can't imagine that like kind of all the time at a different level. The funny thing that I learned the hard way, speaking of getting canceled, is my lavalier mic, you know, filming, I didn't know, and I never said anything unless the editors never told me, but my mic was hot in the, there was a truck, that the control room truck that sees all the feeds and watches everything, and the director's in there, and they're doing the show from there the whole day. They just kept my mic hot all day. I don't know why.
That's weird.
Wow.
Yeah, and someone...
They're like, we gotta get some dirt on this guy.
I don't know, or maybe like... Just because it was like, I don't know, because we filmed so quickly. They were like, we're not going to keep muting him because we're about to be on again. And he's, you know. And so I had a great, someone told me and gave me the inside scoop. Not that I would say anything on a kid's game show. Like I was already buttoned up. But not only that, the camera was also always, you forget the camera's on you. You're the host.
Right.
Every time you stop down. So that was actually like a really good learning curve for me. And it's different than stand up or anything else. Yeah. When you're in stand up, it's like in the moment and you do your set and you're out. This was like, even when, and maybe say I would never get like that annoyed, but say like it was like the sixth time we were doing something, you know, like you still have to like make sure kids there and like everyone who's watching the monitors doesn't think you're having a bad time. So that was like an interesting curve. And the first few days I didn't know. So once I figured it out, I was like, oh my God, I better make sure I don't I'm not like... This is awesome. And then the second we stop down, I'm like, these mother effing kids. They don't.
Yeah. I mean, well, kids bring another element to it. I mean, when Mark Norman was on, he talked about how when he was on Conan, he was so excited and, you know, got to sit with him and talk. And then the commercial break came and he started asking him questions and he was just like, he completely turned off and was like, yeah. Mm. And, but Mark's an adult and can understand that. It must be tough working with kids that like, you really do have to be almost Barney in a way. Where like if you're doing all right, let's take 11 inside, you want to be like it was fine on take two, but you have to just be like, all right, let's do it again. And I mean, to do that for 3 weeks, 5 episodes a day, that must have been tough. I mean, I can't imagine for anybody.
It was great. It was a learning curve just to figure out that flow of it, you know, and I can empathize, which is weird to say, but like, you know, remember when Steve Harvey was like, don't talk to me if you don't need to. I think he could have been nicer about it, but I can understand like when you're churning out as many episodes as you are, you have to like save your voice and your energy. And I get that. He probably could have been nicer, but it's a demanding type of job. And I'm not trying to say like, look at me, it's demanding. I did one season, never did it again. But, I'm saying how I get how people can maybe get bad reputations of being like, I'm on. Okay, we're off. Because it's almost like a break. You know, it's like an energy break.
Especially if you have people, everyone doting on you in a way that all you have to do is say to one person, be like, I'm a little tired, but that was fun. And then they take it as like, Paul's tired. And then it's a game of telephone that goes down to the intern. And they're like, Paul's really tired, so don't even look at him. And, and then that person might go, wow.
Mattress.
Yeah. And they go, wow, Paul must be like a really mean guy. He just like, he doesn't want me talking to him, but really it was a game of telephone where you told someone you were just a little tired. And then by the time it gets to a lowly intern, they're like, don't even look at Paul. You piece of shit.
Yeah, here comes Grumpy.
I never want that to happen or ever be like how I work. And the other side of this is like, I play for a living, you know, like I also have kept my perspective that like I literally play around for a living. And even doing the kids game show, it felt like that. Like we had big props. It was very similar to Double Dare, actually. Big props, like crazy, huge things they built, like running around, throwing all these things, like getting messy. Like the other side of it is like I'm literally spending a few weeks like playing around with families. And I felt that's super awesome. Grateful that like, that's what my job was for that. So if anything, of even course. Like energy, you know, if you feel burnt out or, and that, I think that goes for a lot of showbiz. That's also why I have a hard time when someone's like begrudging. And I think that's a good perspective. Yeah. Some of the biggest celebrities have that same perspective. It's like, this is, you know, this is great that we get to play songs for a living or we get to tell jokes for a living. Or like, I think anybody who's able to make money doing this stuff can realize that. And I hope I never lose that. And I don't think I will because I love what I do, you know?
I hope that Ryan and I become so famous that we do lose that. We lose sight of everything and we just want the cash and we hate everybody.
From the start, Jason and I were clear with each other. We said, once we make it, we want to be mean to everyone and throw it all away.
Well, look,
and,
if you
just complete jerks.
There, if you look at the Ellen stuff, there's got to be some fun in that, you know? There's got to be some level of enjoyment.
Absolutely.
In being a jerk.
Just being ruthless. Don't look at me. I actually saw her tape her game show last year. A friend who did my game show is producing Game of Games. Is that what it's called?
I believe so.
And to your Conan Mark Norman story, she reminds me of that too. But it doesn't mean she's mean. It just means that she like doesn't bring it until she's live, which I get because she's like always on, you know. But it was interesting to see. It was interesting to see kind of her just like. And for when you do it that long, it's not even like you are concerned with anybody. Like you're just ready to just perform when you go on. Because it was almost like, you know, they stopped doing the game and she just like stood there, like paused until they went again. And I guess my personality, like you want to see if the kids are cool. You want to see if like, I don't know, should we do it again? How's it going, director? Like just like in the moment. And she just literally was like, just paused.
Mm. And the producer of Beat the Clock was always like, damn it, this Paul guy, he's a sweetheart. There's nothing wrong with him. We need some damn dirt on this guy. Leave his mic hot the whole time and the camera's rolling. We're going to get something.
Send Billy Bush into his trailer.
Yeah, that ought to mess with him a little bit.
There's enough from the past hour that you guys just recorded that, you know, cut the right way will be enough dirt. Enough dirt
100%. For me. We got
cut the right
need.
Way, baby.
Wop Billy
this is
Bush.
Life.
Happy Woppy Billy Bush.
Poppy Van Bush.
As we wrap up, I know we don't want to take your time too much longer.
No, whatever
but I know, but all right, in the next hour.
I just wanted to find out what Paul really thinks of us.
Find out what Paul thinks about the presidential election. Like, oh God, no! don't take a side. Don't do it.
The thing about America.
Paul's place.
We
don't know how to edit.
Yeah.
When you talk about, you know, church and state.
In the back of a Miata. No!
Jesus.
You were saying, I could be working more and all this stuff, but you are. Like, you do a bunch of internet, Instagram, social media content. You're always doing that, and it always spawned from the Gorilla Late Night days. Mm-hmm. But you did a spoof song for Chris Cuomo joking about how at the height of COVID, everyone was kind of glued to Chris Cuomo's show. And it was a whole joke about how you found out that your wife was in love with Chris Cuomo.
Right.
And then he actually reached out to you about it, right?
Yes.
Physically reached out.
Yeah, he was like, don't you dare sing about me behind my back with the Cuomo brothers. That's how he talks in real life. It's so different than on TV.
All right.
Yeah.
Sounds unbelievable.
It was weird that he showed up with the governor, too. Like, both of them are, like, they're not busy enough. He's like, I'm the brother. I'm Chris's
brother.
I'm the
other brother.
He didn't say his name. He just said, I'm the brother.
I'm the brother. Right. I'm like, I know who you are. You're Andrew Cuomo. He's like, we're going to kick some coronavirus ass.
Wow, cool. And then you guys suited up.
Yeah, they go, where's the toilet? We're going to give it a swirly because we're in high school.
Actually,
the toilet a swirly? Not Paul?
Yeah.
Humor me for a second.
Okay.
The Cuomo brothers in high school, humor me for a second, were just absolute beasts. Like motorcycles, like hooking up with everyone. Like just like
guy, girl, doesn't matter.
We're the Cuomo. Get over here.
Give us a kiss, Teach.
And like it's homeroom and the place is filled with smoke because they got a running motorcycle in the building.
That's it.
Andrew, present.
You can't tell me what to do. Do you know my dad? Let's go. Let's get out of here. What are we doing?
And then
where are you going?
Their dad was just like the sweetheart, like cafeteria guy who's like, all right, you know, like here's extra rice. And they're like,
Shut up, my dad's
the freaking best. Look at this guy. He's tough as nails. Whatever your mother wants to do. That's a man, goddammit.
Yeah. More mashed potatoes? Oh, yeah. You know I love those carbs.
You can't stop leaving school to go hang out underneath the New Jersey Turnpike. Oh, wait, they're from New York. It doesn't make sense now.
Yeah, that's damn where it. We I lost damn it. That's it. Where they, well, everyone lost us.
It makes sense if they were going all the way to New Jersey because they had school the next day. Yeah, so it's like, get off the turnpike.
We don't care where we're going.
They walked on train tracks most of their high school career.
Without knowing.
They tied kids to train tracks most of their high school career.
You're going to get a knuckle sandwich.
Yeah. And then they were, but then their dad, because he was the cafeteria guy, he was like, "What knuckle sandwich coming up?" And he attempted to actually make a knuckle sandwich. He cut off a guy's hand and just took the knuckles. And he was like, "What do you want, wheat or whole or regular bread?"
Give me regular, unleaded.
Oh, boy. That ain't gluten-free.
I really like, though, by the way, guys, and I'm not trying to make you sound dumb, but in this fake world, like, their dad is a lunch man and not the former governor of New York.
Yeah.
Whoops. Mario Cuomo. Wait, listen. But for real, I think the career chat was bored a lot of people. If you guys could just bump up the Cuomo stuff to the beginning. just go from like Nicki Minaj, Pap, straight to Cuomo Brothers in high school.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
By the way, I can't help as an interviewer to like, I want to get back to your answering your question. I'm always in the back of my mind. Where are we? I think that way as an interviewer, it's always weird to be interviewed because I'm constantly asking others questions.
And to be thinking while we're asking questions, these guys suck.
Yeah, no, like, you guys are
out of this. That's your question. Actually, how do I get out of this?
No, I listen to this show often and I love your questions. I love this show and I'm honored to be on here. It's awesome to chat with you guys.
Oh, no, thanks. It's awesome to have you on.
Yeah, thank you for being here. Yeah, I mean, thank you. So, so Cuomo, being on quarantine, not working as much as maybe the game show time in my career, I'm trying to just do funny bits from home more and more. And in these days, there's opportunities just to make dumb stuff and see where it goes. And the Cuomo thing came from real life. My wife loves him, watches him every night. Like, you know, he's stronger, he's buffer, he's cooler, he's got a better job. But anyway, I'm not insecure about it. I'm not insecure about it, I swear. But she calls me Chris half the time. It's weird. But anyway,
I'm sure that's fine.
We're working on it. So I wrote this jingle and I started, and the original idea was like, my wife loves you. Like, I had a whole scene about like her waking up from a dream and he was in it. And then like, she was kind of like, can you not make a whole love song about me loving this guy? Cause like, it's true. And I'd rather you do like, you know, maybe change it a little. And she was like embarrassed that it was like just all about her loving him. And so I kind of upped it to my whole family, my daughter, my mother-in-law, everybody loves Chris Cuomo, which is still true.
Right. Yeah.
But the fun part of it was like right in the beginning of the COVID stuff. And, I really just made it to have some fun on Instagram, and he saw it. His whole family saw it. He reached out. He was like, this was a really bright, funny thing for us to see, especially given the dark times for our family and for the country. Thanks so much for that gift. Like, he was really sweet about it. And for me, that was like a win as a comedian. Like, I was able to, you know, make this parody and get to the source and actually bring them some joy for a minute. It was fun.
Right, well, it goes right back to what you were saying. You were able to win somebody over who may not have been like that, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just like, yeah.
It goes right back to your iHeart days.
Yeah, it was just fun to do something. I've also, Ryan knows this too, I've always tried to do bits where like it's funny to me if the people I'm talking about or like we're joking about like see it or share it or, you know, it's always like a funny way to do stuff.
That's the goal.
I love doing parodies too. It's like a muscle from like high school and being younger that I've always done that I want to do more of. And my wife's a professional musician, so the joke is like I'm writing songs and singing now, and I just totally shouldn't be. Like, she's the one who's the pro.
Well, with that song, did you? I mean, you're an incredible drummer. You play a little piano and guitar as well. Did you kind of talk over the song musically with her, or was she like, "This is so dumb, go do your thing"?
I kind of showed it to her once it was done, and I was like, "This is what I did." Get her approval. Like, I was like, "How's this chorus?" And she was like, "Yeah, it's awesome." But it wasn't. She didn't want anything to do with it until I was like, "This is what it's gonna be," and she was like, "Okay." But the funny part about her is she's a professional recording artist. And I'm not the best singer. So the secret about all these parodies is like I send them to like her main, a buddy of ours, this great guy, Fakayo, but her like main master guy. And so like he takes these like, you know, poorly sung things and makes them tolerable. And that's what's funny about it is now people on my Instagram are like, wow, you actually have a good voice. Like, you should sing more, when it's like 1,000% auto-tune.
Oh my gosh. That must be so. Does she like, I'm not in a mean way, of course, but does she just roll her eyes? Like, cause you obviously sing ironically and sarcastically, I'm sure, for her in a way, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't sing well though. I don't sing at her level. Of course not. So it's funny that now, like, I'm having her guy mix and master these like Cuomo songs, all these parodies I do.
Aside from that, I know before COVID you were doing a weekly show at Caroline's, a stand-up mm-hmm. show. And then I don't know if, you know, you want to talk about it or what extent you want to talk about it, but you are producing a show called, well, should I say
it? Yeah,
or,
you can say it. Yeah, yeah.
You're producing a show called The Pop-Up Show that is, it kind of takes everything that you've done from Gorilla and your experience working at New York Live, if that's fair to say,
yep.
and combining it into a travel talk show.
For sure.
And that's in post-production now.
It is. What's that word? Amalgamation? That was it.
That's it. Amalgamation.
Ding, 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 ding. A Dalmatian? But that's basically...
It's 101 Dalmatians, Glenn Close.
101 yes. Amalgamations. the United Amalgamations. So, I basically took everything, like I said, like being a dad and doing these mom and pop segments for New York Live for so many years, I just have been, I've had more time to figure out like, what do I want to do? What type of work do I want to do as a host? Why am I a host? Why am I doing this still? You know, not in a depressing way, but just kind of trying to figure out what my next move was, and working less enabled me to really come up with a way to basically reboot the Gorilla concept with the cardboard desk, which we had in Times Square, and bring it across the country to do like a pop-up talk show in small towns across America. And it's, you know, I say talk show because it's kind of like a novelty. Like, we have the desk, we pop up with it. I have my sound guy hold curtains that I come out of in the beginning, and I have a music guy, my buddy Lucius from the gospel band in college, my main musical sidekick. But we really just use that to get in and out of places. It's really like a docu-follow comedy show based on real people across the country. And my inspiration is like Conan on the Road, you know, the Conan remotes. I love him. I feel like it has that flavor. And then also like the Bourdains of the world, where it's like, we're really hunting and seeking out like interesting, funny stories and people that are quirky out there. And for me as a host, like, I want to go celebrate those people. And in the beginning, in the sizzle, like, of selling the show, we're like, I've interviewed everybody. Now I want to interview the fabric of America and people that are really out there with things to say. And there's just so many funny characters to feature. I feel like it could be endless. And so the goal now, we produced 6 episodes. We're trying to sell it to a streaming platform or to a network. And we've actually had some pitch meetings, and like, it's just up in the air. And if nobody cares or gives me money for it, it's going to be out soon just through my digital platforms, because I really want people to see it.
That's awesome. Can't wait to see that all done. I've seen a few clips here and there of some shorter segments from a few episodes, and it's looking really good. And I was lucky enough to be in part of one episode,
Ryan,
which was really fun.
Ryan absolutely nails it in the Massachusetts episode, playing the part of a single guy on a dating app.
Yeah, there was no fruit, Jason, though. I didn't get any fruit or
yeah,
or any
it's
snacks.
True. He drove himself too. That was not the best gig.
My.
Yeah, it wasn't the best.
That just seems like a big waste of time. No, I think I think all three of us share the same mentality of, you know, continuing to work as much as possible, and you know, always reaching for that next thing. No matter how much hair you lose during it.
Yeah.
Jason and I are now bald.
Yeah.
Right, right. Sore subject, because I spray like dark brown spray on my head every time I'm on TV. Mm. Anyway.
Do you?
Yeah, well, depending on the shoot and the lights, you know. I'm gonna get an aggressive hair piece, though. I want to get to the level where I'm hosting shows and people like my hair, and then like everyone knows it's fake. Like, I can't wait for that.
Right. Who's the guy who used to throw glitter at everybody?
Man. He was in the Jackass movies, right?
Yeah.
Glitter.
Oh man,
Steve-O? Yeah, Steve-O? No,
no, I forget his name. That's terrible.
Yeah,
but I mean, well, you could basically be like John Cryer. He just had like basically sod on his head.
Oh yeah,
I wonder.
Admitted it on Conan.
I wonder if that's why maybe I need. I'm not doing as many shows. Like, maybe I need something where it's like, let's just give him the show, because like that's sad, man. He needs the work. Like, look, he needs a better toupee. You know, that might help. That might help me. I always wanted to be that guy though that has big hair. Sinatra had a great hairpiece. God bless him.
Yeah. Oh, I remember when I was shooting this show at Stern and we needed a real afro. And we got a call from a guy who gave us another guy. And we went up to this place, really high rooftop-ish penthouse, whatever, room in some sort of some building, I forget where, in Manhattan. And when we got there, he was, you know, we were like looking at the pictures on the walls. We're like, wow, what does this guy have all these pictures? And one was Sinatra. I'm like, wow. So then he goes in and telling us about the pieces he created and, you know, when he created Sinatra's. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's amazing. He had so many amazing stories. And then I was like, wait, what are we even doing here? We can't afford any of this. because he didn't know and we didn't know that we, you know, had like a crap budget. And then also this guy didn't know either, but we were, you know, recommended. We just got something eventually, I think from like Party City, but that's unbelievable. Incredible to be there.
You went to Sinatra's hairpiece guy. That's crazy. And
he showed up, he had froze ready for us, different afros, and they were Sinatra's really, Sinatra was like, I'm going to go with the fro tonight. Mr. Sinatra, I don't think you should. Hey, who's the singer around here?
There's some wild sauna pictures of him and Dean Martin, both with afros, that are hidden from the public. But he notoriously wore afros, actually, like underground.
Wow. I did not know that.
Can you get canceled after you die?
Yeah, that's going to be the clip. That's the clip for the promo of this.
I don't know, but I'm sure it'll happen after people listen to this at my funeral. Anyway.
My whole family loves you, Chris Cuomo.
All right, everybody, thanks so much for listening to that episode. Boy, was that a doozy. No, but seriously, we want to thank Paul. You know, it was a lot of fun talking to him. We learned a lot. And if you want to hear more episodes, go to Believe.com. That's BLEAV.com. Also, you can find us wherever you listen to podcasts, Spotify, iTunes. Rate us, follow us, and
be sure to follow Paul on social media. Just look for @PaulCostabile, and just because that sounds super Italiano, I'm going to spell it for you. It's @PaulCostabile. That's how you spell Costabile. You can follow him on Twitter, Instagram, wherever. Go on YouTube and try to find him. You can also go to his website, PaulCostabile.tv, and you can see some other great content that Paul has.
Right. You can follow him in person, too. You find him, you can follow him.
But you can also be on the lookout for his new show that's in post-production right now, The Pop-Up Show, which should be popping up somewhere soon. So be on the lookout for that. And God bless you.
Oh, yeah. Take care. Have a good one.
Yeah, and tell the Cuomo brothers we're coming
for. We sent you. Actually, don't.
Yeah, no. Don't. They're really tough. They're too tough.
We all love you, Chris Cuomo. And don't even get me started on him and his brother.